This project started, in essence, 2 years ago, and we're using a very different route to try and get to the end result than is the usual. I'm going to cover sort of 9 topics in brief, each one. The purpose of the project is mostly known to this community. And then we'll go right through to sort of precautionary environmental measures. We have developed some processes here which are quite unique, and I unfortunately can't go into all the detail. But nevertheless, the purpose of the project is to generate energy through tidal currents, and as you know, we've been involved in this since early 2005, with the first publication in May of that year. But this resulted just quite recently. So the advantages of the turbines obviously are well known at this point. So there are, in essence, the beauty of the marine turbines is you can generate a lot of energy from a very small structure. Primarily because of the water is very dense. And that they are submerged, and therefore sort of literally and at least from the surface perspective, they're acoustically isolated. There are 2 or 3 points that I would like to emphasize, and I've done this before at this conference and others internationally. The power of the current is determined by this equation, and it's extremely important to know there is a constant, 0.5, the density of water, which is comparable to the density of air for windmills, which is rho, and then the area of the swept area of the blade, and then the current velocity, which is a cubed function. And that's very, very important. So A is significant because the power output increases by the square root of blade radius. So you get a 2-fold increase in power output, generates 4-fold more energy. But on the other hand, Z cubed is an extremely important function, and we should not overlook this lightly. So a 2-fold increase in velocity of current, I'll go through this in a few seconds, gives you an 8-fold increase in power output. And if you do this comparison, fairly elementary, at 2 meters per second, as you see in the left-hand column, this is 4, the power output, in reality, for a 16-meter blade, is 824 kilowatts. And then, of course, at 4 meters, it's 6,593 kilowatts. And that is a major, major difference. If you switch to a 20-meter blade, oh, sorry, the 16-meter blade is the diameter that's used by CGEN in the Strangford lock, and that was presented on occasions yesterday. They're about to increase the diameter of the blade to 20 meters, and that gives a slight increase in power output, going from 824 meters at 2 meters per second to 1,287. And again, if you're at 4 meters per second, then there's a major increase that you can see the difference there between speeds. But then the diameter increase of 20 meters only gives you like a 1.4, 1.5-fold increase in power output. So you can compensate to some extent by the blossom, lower current velocity by increasing blade radius. But technologically, we're not there yet. You can only go 15 meter blades going to 20 in about 3 years. And that's being done by the current turbines in England. This is the first sort of diagnostic power output curve generated worldwide by lean current turbines from CGEN, which is in the Strangford lock. And it's an important curve that shows a number of features of CGEN, which is a commercial scale model. You'll notice that on the left-hand side, down here, if you go straight up from this curve, that the cutting velocity is 1 meter per second. And that's a little slower or more power that's required for subturning the blades than we would have anticipated. The velocity before is given 0.7 meters per second. And at this, the output in terms of power in the red is rated in this particular case by the tilting of the blade, so the turbine is not overstressed or run at very high speeds. And so it tops here at 3 meters per second with a power output of 1.2 megawatts. And this is real power output. It's not random anyways, in the sense of any adjustments being made in terms of turbine efficiency or inefficiency. This is the power output as read by the machine during this period of time. And so this can be increased depending upon the machine's capabilities, whether it's engineered in a way that's specific sufficiently. And also, they are now in the process of generating 1.5 megawatt machine, sorry, a megawatt machine, which will then can be increased to about 3.5 meters per second. And these numbers are extremely important. And you'll notice in this table that 2 is meters per second is sitting in here. And the 1 cutter velocity is much lower. So I want to just touch very briefly on the tidal resources in New Zealand. It's something that I started doing, reviewing back in 2004. We had this data, and it's a courtesy of NEMA. And there are different sites listed here. I have 57 in total, but the top ones are shown. French Pass is extremely fast. At peak velocity of 4.8 meters per second, but it's very turbulent. It's got huge holes, 3 of them, in fact, either side of the reef, but extremely high power density. The Tory Channel is 3.6, with reportedly peak tides taking up about 3.8 meters per second. The Koryu Rift, this might not be a realistic number, it might be more like 2.8, but the data is still coming in from NEMA. And then after that, you've got the Estuarine Harbors. At much lower velocities. So where are these sites? One, of course, is French Pass, which is a very narrow channel here, and then, of course, that's the Herbal Island, and that's the one that has high current velocity. So that's site number one, and then two, of course, that's down here. You've seen some of the earlier talks, the Tory Channel. And then the other one is the Koryu Rift, which is off the southwest coast of Wellington. So it's these three sites that we've been reviewing very carefully. And number one, as I said, is too turbulent. So the Tory Channel, I'll go through very quickly, very briefly, starts off on the northeast corner. This is where the current speed is maximal. And of course, it opens here in Queen Charlotte Sound. So it's in the northeast sector of the Marlborough Sound. And it's this particular site that's important. And you've seen a diagram yesterday that's very similar to this. We've modified it a little bit. And I might point out, it probably escaped the attention of most yesterday, but we have been very conservative in our thought about how much power this could generate. We're concerned about sedimentation, even though it's a very rocky channel. And so we had initially thought that we'd proposed 25 turbines. And since the rate of speed of NTC turbine is 1.5 megawatts, then the total output would be something like 37, 38 megawatts. We were delighted to hear yesterday that even if you put in 50, you still only have a very minor decrease in current velocity, which was unexpected. So that presentation yesterday doubled the value of our company. We took up 50 turbines and 75 megawatts. That would be a minor change. So this gives you an idea. There's not much to look at, but this is East Head here, the one we roughly finished the points going out from entrances to Promontory Channel. The distance is the southern end, of course, the North Island. And you get a very strong tidal rip coming through. This is a peak current flow. There's not much turbulence, and certainly not compared with French Pass. And it has a relatively smooth symmetry, which I'll show you in a few seconds. So, looking at the NEMA data, it has a nice sort of curve structure going through the entrance. There is a curve, which we believe we can take care of, and this is, of course, a three-dimensional bathymetry. So he has some really good detailed information. We need more, and NEWA will provide this at a subcontract. So we need essentially microbathymetry data and also have a current velocity study. find out just exactly where the fastest currents apply. So, this just shows the channel cross section. It's very different, I should point out, from a Nestrian sandbar or a harbour. It has rocky shorelines and a rocky base, and so we don't have to worry about sedimentation too much. It has distances, if you see here, about 200, 300 metres across, in which you can put turbines. Now, I'm going to go through very quickly, very briefly. The Shijian, which is this one we've seen yesterday, so we know that this is in the Strangford block of Portaferry in Ireland. This is during the initial installation. It's got the bow of the rotors lifted during assembly. It has, of course, these large markers to indicate a dangerous object in the water. And the other turbine, which we're considering, we've had discussions with Roy Siemens, and I understand it's a representative here today. But these were given to us by, or sent to us by, the management of Roy Siemens. And this is a turbine that would sit on the floor in farms. It would be moored out on in the schematic sort of artistic rendition on a barge, which is sort of like a catamaran. It drops down the turbine from the stern onto a cradle and onto a monopole. And then the cradle would leave, the turbine behind. I might add that the latest version of that turbine, which I've just received a few weeks ago, it's changed a lot. It's a modified design now, which has a sort of a circular, very dynamically, hydrodynamically designed base. Just two points I would like to point out in terms of transmission. I've met with the CEOs of Perimarine Systems in England, and this device makes the whole process of installation much, much more efficient. They now have developed, the English government has funded and developed what they call Wet Mate, which is an automatic coupling instrument that allows connection of high voltage cables end-to-end underwater without having to use a diver or a platform above. And they're currently developing an 11 kV connection cable, and then they'll be going to the other larger units. So this is where the turbine array is to be located, and it's usually 50 turbines in that site. We have contemplated going down to Aroma Bay here in Lincoln via a high voltage DC cable to Transpower's outlet for the transport cables out here. But the step-up transformer we would require under consultation with Transpower would make it prohibitively expensive. So the other option is to go down through the Lincoln Tory Channel. And rather than going into Shakespeare Bay, we go to Picton Bay, where there's a nice sewage line waiting for a nice good cable to come by. The other option is to leave from here and go straight across to Wellington. And we're doing business models right now to figure out the costs. There was one surprise, and as you know, someone said yesterday, we're doing an extensive consultation. It's been going on for about 4 months now. We've gone through the entire, apart from one group, we've gone through the complete consultation series with interested parties. We have complete support for this point, but then you never know what's coming out of this network of surprise. One of the real surprises was that I met with the upper management of Environment, and this was obviously one of our concerns. Our main argument was that we took the turbine, if we put it on the base of the Tory Channel, this would be the relative size of the ferry, and it was the huge amount of space between the hull of the ferry and the top of the turbine, which would allow us, in effect, to raise the turbine up a distance until we meet the peak of current flood. So when I met with Peter Clark and company, I had two surprises. Number one, I'll go back to that previous slide for a second. My thought was that we'll put the turbines here because they were surely not a little channel for safety reasons. And no, that's not the case. They would rather we put the turbines in the center and then they have the vessels traveling on both by those opposite sides. So that allows them to pass port to port and increases their safety. So that was point one. They encouraged us. They gave us all the reads we needed to get initial information. And secondly, I had discovered this particular photograph and technology about a year ago, you know, top of all. And it's totally a total innovation. This is the Arahura, one of the Antarctic ferries. And they had coated the hull with dimethyl phosphine. Now, what is this material? It's Teflon, that's what we have in our fry pans. But a little bit more sophisticated. And so overlaid, they were thrown in silane, and the effect is that the surface of the sark stain becomes wrinkled, more like the skin of a shark. So not only does it increase transit and fuel economy, so the vessels can actually travel at the top speeds without using as much fuel, but also the marine biota don't stick. And if they do, they slide off. So the modern versions of this, the one that's just, this was done in 2004, 2005, all they do when they take the ferry out of the water is throw it with a high pressure garden hose and put it back in again. And it's not been repainted in 5 to 6 years. I'm not sure what the total lifespan is, but it could be as high as 10 or maybe more. This is absolutely ideal for turbines. And the new one does not require, the new siloxane derivative does not require any sort of speed of the vessel to create a frictional shear. So this is a huge advance, in particular in terms of that approach. They also put them on the propellers. We were asked by Maritime New Zealand, by the Harbour Master, by other elements from this slide you've seen, the question was, do we need to be concerned about wave profiles? Do we need to be concerned about waves entering the Tory Channel and upsetting the turbines? And of course, the wave attenuation is very high in water. In other words, the wave at the surface doesn't penetrate very far, so that's not an issue. But we've developed a case against that. We're also proposing to put Dovey meters out from the end of the channel, just in case we get a large wave coming through that's unprotected. And then we can take it avoiding action by just turning off the turbines. And you'll notice on one of the earlier slides that I've got to point out that you can actually turn off the marine current sea gen within 3 seconds. The blade will arrest, and you can arrest it in any position that you want. So they could be vertical, they could be horizontal. Now, just in closing, I want to cover a couple of marine mammals and aquaculture plants. There are four aquaculture plants in Tory Channel, and we have their full support, in particular New Zealand king salmon. Mark Gillard has been very forthcoming, and that is a relief. Now, this is Maui dolphin, but Hectorae. Also exists down there in reasonably large numbers, not like now we've seen 141 mean of 141 animals. But then we have Hectorae, the related cousin, that's separated by 16,000 years. And these populate Banks Peninsula, also North Kalikitali Bay, Clifford Bay, and also on the west coast of the South Island. So we've developed ways of not advancing. Protecting these animals and implementing evasive action. But I want to just show two slides here which I think are important. Marine noise background, and this is put together by the Scottish Executive, which is the Scottish Parliament. And this is given to me by folks this is an Aberdeen conference or energy conference. But the earthquakes, explosions, you've got heavy shipping, heavy precipitation, wind force effects going from 1 through 8, and the amount of noise that's being generated in terms of decibels, and also the frequency. And this is a regular sort of background, both from natural sources, but also for vessels, whether it's heavy shipping, deep and shallow shipping. And this needs to be considered very carefully in terms of marine design. One needs to study lower the effect of these sources of noise. And in this case, we've got fish, we've got seas, we've got, sorry, I can't read it, manatees going down through the list of divers. But this is the hearing ability or the effect of sound at different decibel levels on the hearing ability and the frequency. And all of these species of sounds above this black line level have hearing deficits induced by the sound emission. And sometimes this can affect over large distances. Dolphins can clearly hear sound from a vessel over a distance of 17 kilometers in response to it. So the idea is that sound would be emitted by turbines down to a very low level, and odd enough, the turbines that we are going to be using with from marine current turbines are in effect, they have a gearbox, we can do away with gearbox, we can put the entire device underwater, and that's sort of the designs and design and construction phase at this point. So what is the short-term target? Well, we plan now to install turbines, a total probably of 50, in specific locations in conjunction and following the data that NIWA and the University of Otago presented yesterday. And we're likely to go to the 50 marine turbines with rated capacity 75 megawatts, and this is real output, rather than being a place for the guest to know. And these turbines will have a diameter of 20 meters and be rated 1.5 megawatts. So I'll close at that point. And I'm happy to answer questions. The time is up, it's a millisecond, so only one or two questions are possible.
Thank you,
Two brief questions. Who's funding you, and when do you start actually building?
I'm funding it at this point, but we're under negotiations right now for extensive funding. I can't say more than that at this point.
And when do you start? Actually, when do you expect you might actually be able to build?
The resource consents are about to be lodged. I'm told within hours. I hope it would be before today. I can't guesstimate how much time it will take to process resource consent applications. We're told by Melbourne District Council, which is a unitary authority, that makes it much simpler. But we're looking for probably August, September for conclusion of hearings on just the first phase, commercial phase.
Thanks, Nick. Anthony, you answered my first question. The second question I had was, what's the distances of the cable runs back to... what's the distance of cable runs either back to Wellington or back to Picton from your site?
Picton is a relatively long distance. It's just over 30 kilometres. The path to Wellington is much shorter. It's about 18 to 20 kilometres. That's assuming that we go to Orangi Bay, and that's not clear at this point. I'll be having a discussion later on with some people. So, but it is a long distance, so we have to find a very effective means of doing transmission cables. Good question. Yes, we're in very close consultation with Marlborough Lines, and we're also transferring. And the land on the south shore of the Tory Channel is very rough. It's rugged terrain. And actually, went for a drive run through there from Picton going up and over and down on the west coast, on the east coast. It's very rugged. It's not reliant, has continued problems with maintenance of the lines because trees come down. And they also only have an 11 kilowatt line and a single line at that. And so there'll be no security of supply. There is the option, one of the attractive options, of going down to Picton, is that the Melbourne lines also need power going the other direction, and telecom needs cables. So we're in discussion now about doing something that's mutually acceptable.
Thank you.